I think what I've learned is being a founder is an emotional roller coaster, even if you've done it before, even if you know how the highs feel and the lows feel. And the key to success is to really be co-founding with someone that knows you personally in times of stress.
Welcome to the Consumer Rundown Podcast, your destination for the people, companies, and trends transforming today's consumer markets. We are your hosts. I'm Penny.
And I'm Dimitri.
Have you ever wished the candy aisle offered something more than the same old flavors? Well, today we're talking with Bella Hughes, co-founder of Better Sour, a better-for-you gummy candy company shaking up the industry with its globally inspired sour treats. Get ready to learn about the rise of global flavors, succeeding in the competitive retail landscape, and how Bella is using her success to elevate the voices of underrepresented communities.
Bella, welcome to Consumer Rundown Podcast.
Thanks, Dimitri, for having me on.
Do you want to do a quick introduction of yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Bella Hughes, and I am a repeat CPG founder. I was born and raised in Hawaii. My mother is an immigrant from Iran. I had an ice cream company that was not successful, but I learned everything from it. I had a successful iced tea company, Shaka Tea, that was acquired by Kings Hawaiian. And now I am back in the founder seat with my lifelong best friend, Samira Niku. And we launched exactly a year ago a new candy company called Better Sour.
What is Better Sour?
Oh my goodness. I could talk about this for hours, but Better Sour is, in our opinion, the most delicious, exciting candy out there. For Samira and I, we are daughters of Iranian immigrants, born and raised in Honolulu, and really, really central to Iranian cuisine and greater Middle Eastern food and snacks is the flavor sour. And really sour more in a culinary and natural sense, whether it is fresh or dried fruits. Pomegranates, apricot, plum are prolific, which make their way into one of our SKUs. And then at the same time, being born and raised in Hawaii, you have this incredible just amalgam of cultures and a mixed beautiful place to grow up in, where a lot of our influence is from the Asia Pacific region. So on that end, we grew up with a lot of sour, fresh and dried tropical fruits like guava, calamansi lime, and Japanese ume plum. Also passion fruit is a big one, mango. And again, a lot of these flavors, specifically right now, guava, calamansi, lime, and ume plum, make their way into our candy. And long story short, we are obsessed with sour. We always love sour and that more natural tart tang. And growing up, we loved Halloween. We embarrassingly trick-or-treated till we were 18. We met when we were a year old, so we're lifelong best friends. But we never liked sour candy. We found it really gimmicky, even as children. And it was this painful experience that would just kind of assault your mouth with way too much citric acid. It just burned your tongue off. And then specifically in gummies, it would become really, really sweet. And what we really wanted to capture was that pleasant tang that we grew up enjoying in fresh and dried fruits. So we decided to launch the candy company of our dreams. We've been doing that since we debuted and kind of announced our product exactly a year ago at Expo West.
Last year, there was a lot of focus on world flavors. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really interesting talking point that reflects so many things. I think it reflects absolutely America's changing consumer palate, the increasing rise of diverse, multiracial Americans. And I think just like the elevated curiosity of eating habits. And I do wonder if that was almost also a pandemic response. People got a lot more into cooking and trying different foods and flavors, and you couldn't travel and leave your home. So maybe you would mentally or on your palate travel by trying different recipes. But global flavors, international flavors, heritage-rich flavors, what Samira and I noted is we've seen the rise of these across the board in nearly every category. It seems like it's a fast-growing new way to define CPG goods, whether you're in frozen, you're in snack foods, you're in beverage. And when we looked at candy, there was not much going on there specifically in gummy candy and sour gummies. So obviously we saw that market of opportunity, but I don't think this is a trend. I think this is one of those seismic shifts of how America eats and consumes and where we're only going to grow especially with the increasing diversity of the American population.
While brands have reduced sugar in gummies, they've neglected innovating with bold new flavor profiles. Why is that?
Well, I think I would start by saying hats off to all the pioneers of making candy just a better experience and not adding all the sugar and not adding all the junk. I think that is just such an important thing to honor. And for Samir and I, we really admire those early pioneers and those brands, many of them that have already been acquired. You know, when you look at candy as a whole, the whole industry, like traditional candy, this is a multi-billion dollar, one of the big, big categories out there. So we surmise probably people were thinking, what's been working and flavor-wise must be working. Why switch it up? And maybe it takes two daughters of Iranian immigrants who were born and raised in the Hawaiian Islands that have together, I don't know, if we combine our passport stamps, been to like 80 countries, 90, avid travelers, foodies that are innately multicultural. I mean, this is our story. This is, in essentially, we say it's our life story in two bags of candy to shake things up. But right around when we were thinking about doing Better Sour seriously, we say we've wanted to do this truly since we were 16 years old. We always knew we wanted to do a business together, something food. We love sour flavors and fruits. There was an interesting article that came out in The Atlantic about just the rise in Americans looking for international candy and the growth of that. So I think there's just been these little percolations sort of on the side about what about global flavors? And we just thought effortlessly, why don't we just make something that happens to be healthy? But the big selling point is our story, these flavors from around the world that we grew up with. But of course, we do have that relentless commitment to health, but we're not really preaching at people that it's 60 calories, it's 3 grams of sugar, it's vegan. We're leading with the flavors. We're leading with that heritage-rich story. And oh, it happens to be this too, is sort of that secondary point.
Consumers now expect reduced sugar in better-for-you candy options. It's become table stakes. To truly stand out, brands need to differentiate themselves with something beyond just lower sugar.
Yeah. And I think there's been like generation one of just there was candy that was made first. Maybe it was the late 90s, early 2000s that was just organic or natural, but it still had that high sugar, but it was using sugar, not high fructose corn syrup, but natural flavors and dyes from plants. Then generation two has been the proliferation of the BFY movement. And there have been a lot of brands that have copied the market leader, the biggest one, and done the same thing, which you're somewhat alluding to. So not a lot of differentiation. And a lot of those brands I know have taken numerous iterations of like launch and relaunch and relaunch again to find their niche. And then I think where Better Sour steps in, we're that generation three that like effortlessly we're going to be that health, but what we're really going to lean on is something different. And for us, it is that global flavors. And there's some really cool brands, you know, I think in the candy space, like Chusa, that are thinking about global flavors, thinking about heritage rich. We're doing that specifically in gummies. It's a big category. And I always think the more there are playing, the more we can go to category buyers and say, look, this is a healthy growing segment. And there's room for all of us. Candy is a multi-billion dollar industry.
When discussing new candies, what qualities excite category buyers the most? Regarding Better Sour specifically, are there any unique aspects that attract buyer interest?
Yeah, I think being to our knowledge, you know, and our experience in vegan, low sugar gummies with a heritage rich story and the global flavors and very specifically sour focused. If we were going to say it in like a sentence, we'd say like, think of us as Sour Patch Kids for today's consumers. If people need to quickly kind of get what we mean, what we're doing. I would say that because it is so unproven, although there is a lot of data, buyers have been cautiously optimistic. They definitely see the rising global flavor trends, but we're playing in candy where that hasn't really been sold yet. There are a few brands out there, but specifically in gummies and sour gummies, that's no one's done that focus yet. So they're really relying on early strong market data performance. And last year we launched in Erewhon, Foxtrot, there are early accounts, Central Market. We were sold for the entire 6 months in maybe less than 100 doors, but we had really strong early market data. And we're super old fashioned. We believe that the biggest marketing is not a social media audience. It's just packaging that sticks out on shelf and says what it is. We think we nailed it with the name Better Sour. And that's been the feedback from so many buyers and customers, and it's merchandised in candies. So it's not too out there. You kind of get what it is really quickly. And it's really that data story from last year that's enabled us to open to date over 1,500 new doors this year. And by June, we'll be in 2,000 doors. And we appreciate all these buyers with their cautious optimism. They're like, prove it to me, prove it to me. And we're here to obviously do that. We want to be good partners. We know how valuable retail space is. And you're only a good partner if you're increasing cart size at checkout and or selling a ton, because there's just such a finite amount of space. And buyers are hit up by, I imagine, 100 brands a week. There's a lot of founders. So we're really grateful for everyone who's been cautiously optimistic and is giving us this chance. And hopefully soon all of America will.
I've spoken with many founders who have concerns about relying solely on social media to reach their target audience. What's your view on this?
I will say wildly unpopular statements. I also have a kind of hybrid duality. I am a pretty active angel investor in the space as well. I see a lot of decks. I live for data. And I think that there is a lot of noise and fluff and celebrity-backed brands and folks that have 100,000, 200,000 followers. But I see the data. I see the turns. And it doesn't reflect how you're going to perform on shelf. My background, where I really cut my teeth with Shaka T, was really heading up retail sales and sort of that strategic key account development. That's what I enjoy most, selling. There's a lot of noise. All I care about is data turns and velocity turns. And at the end of the day, I think there's been a lot about brands trying to sell like this aspirational lifestyle, follow the founder around, or look at this and how many different ways is a brand a lifestyle? Come on, guys. Like, we sell product. We sell things that people buy to consume, put in their body. It lives and breathes in retail. And I think especially sort of like post-COVID, there were a lot of brands that have built something that's not sustainable, where still the majority of Americans are. And at least for the next near to midterm, probably long-term future, we'll keep buying groceries, grocery store shelves. It's a little bit of a different viewpoint than I think a lot of brands. We look hip and cool. I think we're hip and cool. But what matters most to us is that retail execution strategy and our data. It's a data game.
For a founder to be successful in retail, what skill sets do they need to develop?
They need to develop extreme humility. Because as the old saying is, the customer is always right. And oftentimes it could be an issue that it's not even your product, but it's how you're selling your product on shelf that's not communicating to the end consumer that is so, so important. So I think just never sitting on your laurels. Like every time we have a good piece of news, our small team of 4 full-timers, 2 being the founders, it's like, should we celebrate? And my energy is always like a little paranoid. I think a lot of good founders are paranoid. You're just thinking about what is going to go wrong next. We just are always thinking, how can we improve? How can we be honestly just a better service to our retail partners? How do we make this move quicker and communicate clearer and be better while always figuring out how to increase our margin, lower our COGS? So I think that titch of paranoia and dissatisfaction and always kind of having like one eye open, like what's the next thing that could possibly go wrong, and extreme, again, humility to always make adjustments is really important, while also keeping that North Star of like, what is your product about? And like the 2 unwavering things for us are our global flavors. So we're not going to bend on that. And we're not going to bend on becoming an unhealthy product. But everything else, like, is there a better way to communicate even more clearly our packaging? Or is there a global flavor that might perform better than what we currently have? And we have a lot of R&D in the mix. We're always down to shake things up. So that would probably be my number one piece of advice to be successful in retail. And I think the other thing is spending 1/2 day to 1 day a week in stores. You have to understand your retail environment. Every retailer is like speaking a new language. What will work in one will not work in another. It's like you're visiting many different countries, the countries of the retailer, and you need to understand what is their culture like, what is their merchandising, where are you placed, how do they run promos, what are the attributes in place, where a lot of them have shelf tags and stickers that you can even further stick out. And I think founders that kind of just point their finger, that don't do demos, that don't spend time, tend to lose out at the end if they're trying to successfully win in retail, and just being extremely observant and just always thinking, what can I do better?
You've experienced both success and challenges with your previous companies. How have those experiences fueled your growth as a founder? And how are you utilizing those lessons to guide Better Sour?
I think what I've learned is being a founder is an emotional roller coaster, even if you've done it before, even if you know how the highs feel and the lows feel. And the key to success is to really be co-founding with someone that knows you personally in times of stress. So my last company was with my husband, who's also my best friend, and my new company is with my lifelong best friend, who's my sister, essentially. So I feel that's what I've learned the most of. Choose wisely whom you go into business and people that also you trust so deeply that you can both, because there's so much to do, live in your lanes of what you're really good at, collaborate where you need to, but there's that level of trust.
Is there anything that you're doing differently to accelerate growth?
I think it's just more geographic. When I started Shakuhachi, we started in the home market where I was full-time living at the time, Hawaii. And starting this one, Samira and I are primarily in Austin. So there's just a bigger market size, centrally located. You can fly to New York. You can fly to LA if you needed to for a day. Having quickly a really large addressable market is really interesting. But being so committed, connected, Hawaii is where we're from. We're really excited. We just launched with a distributor there. So we're rolling out into all the big island accounts. And that's really special for us.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, the Islander Group, they're amazing. We're, if you know Hawaii accounts, we're in Foodland, which is really cool. And we'll be rolling out into like Times, Don Quixote, KTA. For all the island listeners, they'll know these accounts.
With Better Sour, are you primarily attracting new customers to the category, or are you gaining market share from existing brands?
That's a really good question. And I think what we walked into was that we've seen, looking at SPINS data, at least in the more better for you set, a lot of the larger established brands, holistically, not speaking to any specific retailer, there's been for some of them some declines. And we think it is probably a reflection that people want more interesting flavors. If they're getting this in their snack foods or their frozen or their mocktails or cocktails, why is it not there in candy in a wonderful, wonderful part of most people's lives, a treat? And at the same time, we have had direct feedback from customers that I don't like candy. I'm like, don't worry, we didn't either. That's why we start this. And when they try it, they love it. And I think the way we're getting new customers to the category are largely by, we've had a lot of media coverage, which has been really, really great. So they hear about the product organically. We have had a lot of famous people. We've had like an actress with over 1 million followers post about us. A lot of people, 100 to 500,000. I will say this, we did not get more followers from this. We didn't pay for any of this. So I'm really grateful to all the famous people out there tagging us, but their followers, while they're not following us and growing our social media, they're going out and trying the product and they're very loyal. I think the product sort of speaks for itself, and our end goal is to be of service to our retailers and grow larger cart sizes at checkout. The dream for us is to truly be a crossover brand. I think about Better Sour as a product that the top consumers for gummies, for non-chocolate chewy, where we play in, are Gen Z and millennials. And when you think about sour and flavor palettes, sour, tart, tang, there's so many words for it. It's been hiding in plain sight. It's been taking over America's palate. Look at the rise of kombucha. What is the first thing you'd say to describe kombucha and every fermented food out there? There's a tang, there's a sour, pickles, kombucha, yogurt, probiotic, you know, things. I think sour, this is really that moment for that. And maybe those customers kind of grew up. They grew up eating candy that's more marketed for children that they had as a child. And now they want something a little more elevated and sophisticated. So if we can be that crossover brand, that someone who is a traditional candy eater and then someone who is a BFY eater and then someone, the third tertiary, who thinks they don't like candy, that's powerful. That's being of service to our retailers. And that's the benchmark to be a really, really valuable brand in the ecosystem of CPG. What is very unique about us is we are actually sour from within. So we're really going after mimicking a fresh or dried tart fruit, where when you eat one, a plum, passion fruit, pineapples, pomegranate, and the flavor lasts the entire time. It doesn't just kind of assault you and then get really sweet. Same with dried fruit. We're like, dried fruit snacks are huge, both in Hawaii, lihimoe, ume plums. And then, you know, in the Middle East, there's a fruit roll up right now called Lavashak that I think is getting some traction. That's the OG sour that Samira and I grew up enjoying as well. And they're all this long sour. So ours is a better kind because we believe a better kind of sour is what you find in nature. I mean, it's that tang that sticks with you the entire kombucha experience, or if you're having like a tart yogurt. So it was, that's our name, the origin. And then at the same time, effortlessly better for you ingredients. So I do think there is such thing as too sour. Maybe down the line, there's going to be something where we have something for those sour challenges, but that's not really the brand ethos. It's reimagining America's relationship with sour.
How many doors are you in right now?
We are in the process of rolling out into a total of 1,500. We are midway through a 494 Target rollout in their candy end cap, which is so exciting. When we only started selling in retail in 9 Erewhon doors May 9th of last year. We also are available in nearly every fresh market. We are in the Sprouts innovation test, and the data has been outstanding there. We're in World Market. We're in Foodland. Got to give our local stores a shout out. Central Market, Erewhon, Lassen's, Town and Country. I mean, the list could keep going. So it's very exciting. And we've got another 500 doors committed to come on between the end of March to June, but we can't announce them yet or we'll take away the thunder.
As Better Sour scales, what are the biggest operational challenges you foresee? How are you proactively planning to address them and ensure continued growth?
There's been a lot of love and excitement from retailers, although cautiously optimistic. They've heard about us. They've seen us. They've seen coverage. And the hardest thing for us right now, and it will be in the future, is saying no. There are so many more retailers interested in our product and opportunities and brokers coming to us and potential partners that say, I want to get you here, there, or there. Let's submit to this chain. Oh, they've got 10,000 doors. And just being focused and knowing how much we can say yes to so we can focus our efforts, ensure that we're learning. Really, really important if you're going for a pretty much retail strategy, month over month growth that you want to consistently show, especially in the first 3-6 months in a new chain. And being brave enough to say no, I think that discipline is very hard. And then the other challenge is just being so creative. So I think all founders start from being highly creative. Do we have ideas for 10 different candy SKUs and even additional form factors than the current gummies we're in? Of course. But we are being very diligent about not rolling out too much innovation, because essentially each SKU is like its own mini business. And it's almost like we have a dear diary of all the creative ideas of what we intend to do over the next 5-10 years, but we just place it there. And I think beyond that, saying no and knowing when to say yes, those are going to be challenges for any brand that's got a buzz.
As an experienced founder, you understand the potential benefits of focus and saying no to certain opportunities. Do you find this experience helps you make more strategic decisions for Better Sour compared to a first-time founder who might be driven by the fear of missing out?
Most people, myself included, you get into CPG because first and foremost, there is something that you know needs to exist. Like with Shaka Tea, I'm a terrible insomniac. I can't take caffeine after the morning. I'll mess up my sleep. I love caffeine free. I really wanted to do something related to Hawaii and supporting local agriculture. And I knew it should exist. With Better Sour, our whole palette, our identity, our culture is sour forward, and we never liked candy. So this needed to exist. What I see with a lot of first-time founders in CPG who've never founded anything in any other category before is they're only bringing that passion and that belief and that energy that you do need to move a mountain, but they're forgetting this is all a data game. Be focused on how you perform, because a good story might open a door. A good tasty product might open a door, but it's not going to keep you on shelf.
What was the most valuable piece of advice you received when launching Better Sour? Did it shape your approach or strategy in any significant way?
We got from one branding agency that really respect them, did not go with them, that they wanted to do a different name for us. They wanted us to do something maybe a little more like culture or heritage rich, and they just thought the name was terrible. And it was really unfortunate because this is a very well-known person, someone I totally adore. I admire their work. And we stuck to our guns. We were like, no, we can't engage because we're not open to a name change. There are certain things that are instinct, and good entrepreneurs tend to have good instinct while needing to also be flexible when the customer's always right. Our instinct was, my God, what a crazy story. These Iranian American best friends from Hawaii. That's a lot going on. What culture heritage name are we going to choose that's going to encapsulate that? So let's just keep it simple, Better Sour in a standard 0.8 ounce candy. And then let's tell the story about the pomegranate and the calamansi lime and the guava and the apricots. So that was advice we got that we are proud we stuck to our guns. And now by and large, the name, I think 90% positivity and people get what we are pretty quick. And we had some feedback again from people I really respect. Why change something if what's working is working? People like regular flavors. They want strawberry, chocolate, vanilla and stuff. And we just had that little annoying hunch that like, no, there's a whole group of people that want something more exciting. Those kinds of feedback from people you respect are the best kind because, you know, you kind of get a little chip on your shoulder. You want to prove them wrong.
That feedback surprises me. In many CPG categories, there's been a definite shift towards innovative flavors. Look at brands like Ouroboros in beverage or Fly by Jing in food. Why do you think you received that feedback?
I will be honest, I was too, but it's good feedback to have. And the best feedback is not people agreeing with you. The best feedback is people disagreeing. So you critically overanalyze everything you're doing. If we lived in a world where I was like, this is amazing. Yes. I don't think, for me personally, I'd be as motivated. Definitely people thinking maybe this won't work motivates me to go show it's going to work. At the same time, it just makes you triple check your thought process, maybe make some tweaks because they made a good perspective about how do you make this more quickly relatable, understandable, accessible, so you can see some of that success in that data on shelf.
What do you want the legacy to be for Better Sour and yourself as a founder?
Yeah, well, this is really personal. And this is extremely important for Samira and I. When we grew up, there just was not representation, and there barely is today, about Middle Eastern Americans. I grew up in this very diverse place. Hawaii is the only non-Caucasian majority state. There's been a lot of efforts in DEI conversations the last decade across spheres. But when you really look at MENA, Middle Eastern North African Americans, they've been largely an invisible minority within this country. And for us, it's so small and so tiny, but it means the world to us that on our back of our bag, it says, we're Iranian American best friends from Hawaii. You didn't see that representation. And one of the things that was really important when we started the brand was, how do we lift the entire MENA community? There are so many MENA founders. A lot of time MENA people have hidden behind Mediterranean, but and some MENA countries are in the Mediterranean. Some of them are in West Central Asia and more inland. But how can we not just amplify our story and our voice? How can we amplify greater inclusion, recognition for MENA American founders across categories, but very concerted in CPG? So we started the MENA CPG group. We hosted last year at Expo where we unveiled the brand, the first MENA CPG meetup. And it's just raising that awareness. We're really, really proud that through the ADC, they launched a new certification for minorities that also includes MENA Americans. And we were the first to get it. There was a really nice article in Forbes about this over the summer from Shayna Harris. She also writes Supply Chain Capital. And just increasing that for us at the end of the day, if retailers start recognizing MENA, it's not yet on the census recognized as a true minority, then think about all the benefits. We're fortunate to be WBNC certified. So a lot of times these diverse initiatives enable small brands that don't have a lot of capital or might to eschew slotting fees, which is really critical. They're beautiful celebrations for so many months, for Black History Month, Asian AAPI Month. Maybe one day April is MENA Heritage Month, we'll see retailers in America celebrating. And for us, that is what we hope to do on a very personal note, just raise celebration, inclusion, awareness for MENA founders, MENA Americans. And then I think secondarily, really, really help broaden when folks hear sour, what they think about the tart tang and what sour is derived in nature. Our product is made from plants, compound flavors, dyes that are only from plants as well, and really something pleasant and long, not just that kind of like gimmicky, assaultive sour that people tend to think of. That's just sort of how the palate has been for many years in this country with sour.
Last question. Are there any principles in your professional life, in your personal life that drive you?
Be extremely competitive and paranoid that you're not going to be successful. So you just keep going. I take being a fiduciary steward of other people's capital when they believe in me extremely seriously. Always keep striving, never resting on your laurels, and be immensely kind. There have been so many kind people in this industry and space that have shared their knowledge with me. They've shared their social capital. They've shared their actual capital. They're sharing their retail store shelves. And I truly believe you should give without ever expecting anything back. And that's the energy not only the industry needs, it's the energy society needs. And there's enough abundance out there for everyone. So be as kind as you can be. That's the human value. Just do that.
Great way to approach life and business.
And have fun. I mean, joyous work. I make candy for a living with my best friend now. I mean, how fun is that?
I would hope a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great conversation. It was great to learn more about you and about Better Sour.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you all for listening. Please subscribe for more episodes of the Consumer Rundown podcast and visit us at consumerrundown.com. See you next time.